As someone who spends my life focused on creating value for others, whether through speaking, writing, or entrepreneurship, finding the perfect gift for loved ones can feel like an impossible task. I always aim to give something that's thoughtful, high quality, and meaningful. But let's be honest, it's not always easy. This year, I found the perfect solution, Quince. Quince allows you to treat your loved ones and yourself to timeless, premium quality gifts at a price that makes sense. As someone who values efficiency and excellence, I was impressed by their approach to creating luxury without the luxury price tag. I've personally been drawn to their Mongolian cashmere sweater. It's a classic, versatile piece that fits right into my lifestyle. And if you're like me and travel a lot, their packable puffer jackets are a game changer. Lightweight, warm, and stylish, they're perfect for anyone on the go this holiday season. Quince is committed to doing the things the right way. They partner only with factories that follow safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. And every piece they create is made with premium fabrics and finishes to give you that luxury feel. Get luxury this holiday season without the luxury price tag. Go to quince.com/playbook for 365-day returns plus free shipping on your order. That's Quince, quince.com/playbook to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/playbook.
Rob Riggle, I think one of the things he's most proud of is, of course, being a veteran for the United States Marine Corps, and of course, all the philanthropy work that he does all across the world. But I'm sure as you see him now, you probably recognize him from God. We can go on and on and on from all the movies, but please give a round of applause for Mr. Rob Riggle. All righty. And next up, I'm going to welcome back a repeat offender to the stage, Mr. Edwin Arrarave. Come on up. And last but most certainly not least, we are in whose house? The Rams house. And while we're on the topic of subject, it's a pleasure and an honor to have the Hall of Fame running back, Mr. Marshall Faulk, in the building. Give him a round of applause.
These guys all have an incredible mindset. And so, you know, coming from completely different backgrounds, except for, I think Riggle may be a better football player than he takes off.
Not even close.
No.
But he roots for a good team, unfortunately. But the reason these three people are here is because they care about other people. They literally are here for you. And so I wanted the majority of this to be about you and trying to take out of these guys what made them so successful, because you're talking about, imagine being the best in the world at something. Well, that's what these three gentlemen are. They're the best in the world. You don't get into major movies unless you're one of the best actors in the world, best comedians in the world. You don't make tons of money unless you're one of the best business people in the world, coming literally from nothing. And of course, you're not an MVP, a Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champion, if you don't have a certain desire. So think about that when you're asking your questions, because this is a unique opportunity to have these three types of people up here. I'll fill up with some color, but besides that, ask these guys questions. All right, who has the first question? Of course, Aubrey. Good. That's why I love you.
So as a leader, we're supposed to have, and an entrepreneur, we're supposed to have all the answers, and like we usually do, or we're the person that people come to encourage us or encourage them. And sometimes we need encouragement ourselves. We're overwhelmed, and obviously there's only one of us. Who do you guys go to when you are at that breaking point and you're like, I need someone to fill my cup?
That's great. Oh, you want me to dive in?
Yeah.
I guess I'm holding the thing. Does this work?
No, it's for recording purposes.
Oh, for recording. I was like, I'm not hearing this amplified at all.
Like, this is the weakest mic I've ever held.
The old trick wriggle routine. All right. You know, I don't know if there's one single answer to that, other than, you know, personally, I just try to keep it grounded in some things that I consider either the truth, I'm a person of faith, so I believe in that aspect. So I oftentimes will retreat to certain things in my faith that I believe are the truth and that can ground me. I also have people in my life that I trust, their wisdom and their advice, and I'm not afraid to call on them because they're not afraid to call on me. I try to just assess my situation. I never let myself get too far behind the curve before I'll ask for help, because there's no shame in asking for advice or help. I think maybe there was a time when, you know, that was put on us, you know, like, handle your business, suck it up, show no weakness. And maybe there's a time and a place for that. But also, that isn't the world we live in anymore. I think we're getting wiser about that, where you can say, I don't know what the hell's going on. You know, what would you do in this situation? Because sometimes you get great advice on that. You know, just put it out there. What would you do? And if it's someone you trust and believe in, you might get the good advice you need.
Yeah, so I'm gonna piggyback off what he said. Big on faith. That's like the number one thing I go to. In fact, I got hit with a pretty big lawsuit at the beginning of the year. A lawsuit that, by looking at it, you would think would crush you. And I remember just picking up scripture that morning, the next day, after just being fully discouraged. And I saw this verse that I never even knew existed. It was Jeremiah 1:19 that said, "They will fight you, they will fail, for I am with you, and I will take care of you." God has spoken. And those words gave me so much peace, because I'm like, this can't be coincidence. There's no way that I'm going to open up the Bible and that's the first verse that I'm going to see. And I can tell you that I haven't lost any sleep over that. I also have a big mentor of mine is Irwin McManus, Ed Milet, David Meltzer. And there's a lot of mentors that I have that don't even know that they're my mentors because I study them. You know, Ed's one of my best friends, but half the time I don't ask him anything about business because I'm just studying him, and I'm learning from him, where I don't even have to ask the questions because I already know the answers because I'm studying him. And I think that's the beauty about a personal development. It allows you to associate with some of the most successful people in the world. And when you start taking their experiences and you start to apply them, you will manifest who they are, right? Because you could only receive what your mind can accept. And sometimes you got to get your mind to accept something. And one of the great thing about having mentors is, number one, you realize they're not that special once you actually hang out with them. You're like, wait a minute, they're just like me.
Actually,
they're just like me. And if he's making that kind of money, then I should be making that kind of money because I'm applying everything he's teaching me and he's kind of like me. But you know, when you don't associate with people, you begin to think that they got some secret sauce or something, that they're so special. And I think that's the great thing about being able to hang out with people that are doing better than you. And sometimes that's a scary thing, right? You get nervous. You're like, man, like, this is a big hero of mine. I'm a big Rams fan. And I'm like, oh shit, I can't believe I'm next to Marshall Faulk. That's freaking cool.
Go ahead, Marshall.
Thanks. Well, for me, it's a lot easier because I've had coaching my whole life. So in the aspect of whether it's sports or business, you can always call on a coach, literally. I'll tell you guys a small story just about like when you transition. So I got traded from the Colts to the Rams. And at that point in time, switching teams, you know, it's the first time something like this happened to me. And I found myself kind of down because you're like, you ask for a trade and then you realize that somebody didn't want you. And then you realize someone does want you. And then you go through this whole trade thing. And I realized that Coach Vermeil and I, we were different. And the kind of coach that he was involved in everything in your life. And he was always there for the guys that needed him. And I was used to coaches being the guys who didn't cry, the guys who was tough, who was hard-nosed, and they always gave you the truth. And then throughout my career playing with Coach Vermeil, like, we didn't have the best player-coach relationship, but I respected the crap out of him for what he poured into guys. My first year out of playing football, I was working in television, and that first year, the third game that we had was Dallas, the Dallas Cowboys at the Atlanta Falcons on Thursday Night Football. And lo and behold, Coach Vermeil is calling the game. So we're working together. We're on the same team. He and Brian Gumbel. And Coach Vermeil lost his voice. Our executive producer comes to me and he says, Marshall, you got to call the game. I've never called a game a day in my life. My first game being called is on national TV on a Thursday. There's no other game. And in this game, and this sometimes gets me choked up, in this game, my coach literally gave me his notes, coached me through how to call a game on national TV.
That's awesome.
And I want you to know that story because sometimes when you're looking for help and you want to grow, you always look to people as to where you want to be. But sometimes you have to look at people who remember where you came from, because it's the distance traveled that we forget about all the time. And Coach Vermeil, he remembered the guy that I was when I came to his team and how prideful I was. But at a time when I needed coaching, I was able to accept it. And it was, I was able to receive it from him. And people that you meet, sometimes you meet them in important times in your life, you can't hear what they're saying. You really can't hear them. And then you find yourself in a position to where the things that they said start to make sense. Just remember, you're hearing them now. And coaching is, it's the best. And where you get it from sometimes, you know, that good old therapist, you got to pay for it. You got to pay for it to get you where you want to be. But it's not always the person. I believe it's not always the person that's sitting where you want to be. Sometimes it's the person that's where you used to be that can help you get to where you want to be in life.
Well, that's awesome. Reminds me of a mentor of mine, Dennis Whately in sales, who when I was young told me I had great potential in sales, but I was like you in football, right? In my mind, I was the MVP of the league. And this old guy couldn't tell me how to sell. I was making more money than anyone. And I always remember what he told me. He said, "Someday, Dave, you'll realize I'm planting seeds under a tree I may never sit under." And that's what Dick Vermeil was for you, I think, the same way. Beyond faith in what these guys said, one other aspect I'll bring into the mentorship game today that I find especially powerful is ChatGPT. So Einstein, who I study, who's one of my mentors, because I think time is so not only interesting, but powerful, both man-made constructive time and infinite time. And nobody explains it better than Einstein. But he said something so powerful that's applicable to mentorship and ChatGPT, which is you can't solve a problem in the same consciousness in which it was created. That's what mentorship's about, right? I'm taking a higher consciousness, someone who sits in a situation I want to be in, and I'm changing my consciousness by asking for help. Put into ChatGPT your biggest problem and say, how would Einstein solve this problem? How would Ed Milet solve this problem? How would Dave Meltzer, how would Rob Riggle look at this problem? What would Einstein say about this quote? It's amazing. You can shift a consciousness with people that Napoleon Hill, Carnegie, C.W. Lewis, whoever you want. ChatGPT is extremely powerful in changing consciousness, and it's free. And it literally, I could ask, what would Marshall Faulk say about the Chargers' failure in the second half last Sunday? What would if Marshall Faulk was announcing the game, what comments would he have about the Chargers' second half? I'm changing my consciousness about what I saw in that game. And so use that. It's a really simple mentorship tool to ask for help that wasn't available in the past. Go ahead, Jared.
Hi. What is your advice on how someone can get clarity and cultivate a vision that is meant for them? And then how does someone separate that as a real authentic vision for themselves as opposed to a delusion or a hall?
Wow. That is like, there's a lot there.
Yeah, there is.
There's so much there.
In three sentences or less. Okay. I can't have
that. Yeah. Man, I'll say this. For me, when I speak to clarity, I literally create the clarity. I decide, is it for me or not? And I think in clarity, a lot of times when we're looking for clarity, we're looking for somebody else to validate what you're doing and that it's right. And I never get stuck in that process because I believe in this here. I'm going to do it and it's right. And if it's not right, then I'm going to do what's right. So I'm a find clarity. I'm either, if there's three options, I'm going to find the right option. And I'm okay with if I don't find the right option the first time or the second time.
I love that. Same thing. I typically take action before I have what I need or what I want. I just take action towards it. And what I find is I'll get, you know, what I need, and then I'll break it down to the ridiculous and create sort of clarity for me that way. Like, you know, whatever I want to achieve, I'll set the goal out and then I'll go and break it down to the ridiculous. And what I found is what causes you to take action is your ability to think you can get a result. So to the degree that you think you can get a result will be to the degree that you will take action. And that's why I always say more than people think they lack motivation, but they really lack clarity. And I'm big on visualizing as well, but then I'm big on touching the dream before I actually have it. And then again, breaking that thing down to the ridiculous. And I always have given myself a date on when I'm going to do it by, because that creates an urgency. And then I go after it like my life depends on it. And it's like that date, I'm going to hit it no matter what. And even if it looks impossible, I don't stop until I figure it out. And I can't tell you how many times it looks like it's never going to happen, but because I didn't quit, like miracles will happen, right? And I often say that if you give up too soon, you'll never know the miracles that God has in store for you.
Oh, that's great. Clarity. I think everybody wants it, right? And yet a lot of people think there's a secret. We're all hiding it. It's not, there's no secret. It doesn't happen in one giant epiphany. You don't wake up one day and the clouds part and the wisdom is bestowed upon you of clarity. I think you just have to take action. That's where it starts. Take action and then adjust. So I want to be a comedian. What do I do? Well, I'm probably going to have to get on stage. Shit. Well, before I do that, I better have something to say. Well, what's funny? I don't fucking know, you know, but maybe this. So then you come up with something and then you get on stage and you try it and it sucks and nobody likes you. And then you have to adjust and make it better and make it better. And before long, it's hilarious and it works. That's the only, you know, it doesn't happen in one swoosh. I think it's action steps, consistent action. And then for clarity of mind, of vision, all that stuff, I think Tony Robbins has a saying where he talks about, what is thinking? Thinking is asking and answering questions. That's all it is. Ask yourself a question. What do I want? Okay. Great. We're out of the gates hot. Now I know what I want. What do I want? I want this. I want X. Great. What's the next question? How do I get there? Well, maybe this way. Okay. Or maybe this way. Or maybe this way. Maybe there's three ways to do it. Well, let's start down a path and figure out, you know, oh, this path sucks. I can't do this path. It's not for me. Let me try this other path. Ooh, this fits. This works. Great. What's the next question? And keep asking and answering questions and you will find that clarity. But it's action steps. It's movement. And it's the discipline to keep doing it, because the first time I got on stage, I felt like I was in a car accident. The adrenaline flow was so much that I didn't remember the 5 minutes that I was on stage. They had to show me a videotape afterward to even know. I didn't even know how I did because I couldn't hear the audience. It was really that much adrenaline had been going through my body. So, I think you just have to take action.
Yeah. Good.
One more thing. And like, I was thinking about
just
this.
Clarity.
Yeah, exactly. Because in your question, you asked, is it delusion? And I think before there's clarity, there is delusion, like everything, the goal. So this is my, to kind of put it in perspective. When I was 13, I'm in a Superdome, New Orleans Superdome. I'm selling popcorn. And I think one day I'm going to play professional football and be really good at it. There's nothing clear about that when I'm saying popcorn. That's grand illusion, right? Right? But as I continue to take steps forward, things start to clear up. And a lot of times we don't want to move until we have clarity. And sometimes you have to move before it's clear in order for it to clear up.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Everybody want hot seat?
You just gave me some clarity.
You just reminded me of something, which was, you know, when I was 15 years old, even though I was very shy and I was very timid, the one thing I did have going for me was that I was a delusional dreamer. But what I found was that the best way to put it is we all have this unlimited potential, but it is limited to where you're at today. So at 15 years old, sure, I dreamt of the life I have today, but I didn't believe it. And it was every stage I would hit, it unlocked a new level of belief. And then I did another accomplishment, and then that unlocked a new level of belief. It was almost like a video game. But I'm a big believer that belief drives everything. So to Marshall's point, you have to be a little delusional. And at 15 years old, I was very delusional. But
yeah,
no, I love that. And thank you, Marshall, for also bringing that, because it did spark a thought in my head. So along with the consistency and the discipline and all that stuff, you do have to have a vision. So to start with that question, what do I want? Okay, so I'm in 1994, I'm in flight school in the Marine Corps down in Corpus Christi, Texas, flying T-34s. I'm a young lieutenant. Great, having a good time, but I don't want it. I appreciate it, I like it, but my passion isn't there. What do I want to do? I want to be on Saturday Night Live. That's what I know that, but it's such a silly, ridiculous dream, you know. How am I going to get there from here? You know, but I knew what I wanted. So I went down to the beach and I wrote in the back of a book. It was a Tony Robbins book, as a matter of fact. I wrote in the back of the book, if I quit, it got to count for something because I hadn't quit anything before. So I wrote down, I'm going to get on Saturday Night Live. I wrote it in that book. I wrote it out. I looked at it. This is 1994, September of. For the next 10 years, I found a way to get myself to New York while in the Marines. I quit flight school. I did all these things to get myself in a position. Got to New York, started doing improv at the UCB Theater, started, and in the September of 2004, I got on Saturday Night Live. So you got to have that picture in your head, right? You do have to have that. But it can't be real. But I do appreciate the fact that you got to have the vision. And why not make it big? You know, if you're going to have a dream, make it fucking big.
Exactly.
But then, you know, like I said, it took me 10 years and two wars and all kinds of shit to get there, but we got there.
And just what comes to mind, you know, one, you'll never overachieve your own self-image, and imagination is infinite. Don't forget that. So no matter how big you're dreaming, think something is bigger. And I love the idea of infinity plus one. If you grew up with siblings, right? Infinity plus one. Oh yeah, infinity plus one. It's never going to stop. That's what you should be doing with your imagination. But what also comes to mind in the directive of what all three of these guys are saying is I believe that most people don't make enough mistakes. And the reason I think that is that you will never fail because of your mistakes. You will never fail. Remind yourself, every mistake you make, Dave Meltzer just told you, you're guaranteed never to fail from a mistake. There's only one thing that determines your failure, and it's the lack of commitment. And so in the essence of who you are, all you really need to ask is, my purpose greater than the pain? Am I committed to being on Saturday Night Live? Am I committed to winning a Super Bowl, to being a running back in the NFL? Am I committed to making more money than I ever dreamed of, helping my mom buy a house? Am I committed to it? Whatever it is, these questions, and you kept saying, what do I want? Who can I help? Who can help me? How best can I get that done? According to the circumstances of today, how am I going to prioritize the 24 hours that I'm guaranteed every day, except for the last day of my life? Now you're applying your why, not searching for it. Prioritization is the antidote to procrastination and feeling overwhelmed, the one thing that causes a lack of commitment, procrastination and feeling overwhelmed. So when I make mistakes, I'm like, all right, And it, look, I pride myself. I make more money probably because of the size of the mistakes. I joke with my wife all the time. I'm like, can you believe when I was like super rich, had over $100 million, nobody asked me for financial advice. They asked me to borrow money. But the minute I lose it all of a sudden I'm a financial genius. Like more people are like, dude, can you help me financially? I'm like, you know, I lost $100 million, right? Yeah, that's why I'm asking you. So you never make enough mistakes. Right here, Michael.
That's a great transition. You guys talked a lot about mistakes and searching for success. I'd love to hear about how do you sustain motivation after success, right? Reaching Super Bowl, making a certain amount of money, getting on Saturday Night Live. You have to search for the thing after that, particularly when you transition.
Yeah, I don't know about them, but I'm like, this is probably how I got to become who I am, is because like I'm always chasing me. And it happened in college very early. Like I became well known and very good in college very early. And I was putting up numbers that nobody else was putting up. And it's and like my coaches, actually the guy who recruited me, he would always say, so what are you gonna do this week? Well, that's what you did last week. Well, what are you going to do this week? That was last week's numbers. So very early, I learned to chase me. And if I always chased me and I got to be the best, then I was going to always be motivated to do better.
Yeah, I think for me, I've always figured out a way to challenge myself in just different areas of my life. You know, a big one for me was I'm going to challenge this, the spirituality side, the faith side. It's something that I really hadn't paid as much attention to before. And it was like, let me try that out. And then that comes with its set of challenges. You know, in business, when you accomplish something, it's, you know, what I've always said is every purpose, right? You have a purpose. That purpose is always going to come with a challenge. Your job is to solve it. And then once you solve it, you have what's called restricted freedom, which is where you get to celebrate, you get to be present in the celebration, but then you eventually have to find a new purpose. And that's why you have to have purposes, challenges, and restricted freedom. The reason I call it restricted freedom is because there's this fallacy that we want total freedom. But when if we have total freedom, then you don't have a purpose, which means you don't have a challenge. And if you don't have a purpose, you create your own challenges, and that's usually when you get in trouble. Like every time I haven't had a purpose, I've had too much time in my hands, and I done some stupid shit because I have too much time to think, right? And that's why it's at least for me, it's always been important to, you know, find that new purpose, and it never ends. You know, you're sort of the pursuit of the best version of yourself, right? Once you reach it, then, like I said, it unlocks a new level of belief. So now you could accomplish more because your belief level's higher. So challenges are good.
Yeah. Wow. I guess, so mine is actually a huge failure. But it depends on how you look at it. But I had spent 10 years focused, myopic, Saturday Night Live, got to get there. Don't know how, blah, 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 blah. It happened. And then it was over. It was over real fast. It wasn't my fault. It was, you know, it's just the way it was. I was the last one, and I was the only guy hired that year. Last one in, first one out. It was an election year. Nobody cared about the election, so their ratings dropped. NBC panicked. They cleared out the house, and I was out early. So I didn't get a lot of time on SNL. But I had spent so much time focused on that that when it was over, I was like, shit. It took me a minute because I hadn't thought beyond that. I hadn't thought about anything else other than that. I was so myopic on that that quite literally I was at Command and Staff College down at Miramar because I was still in the Marine Reserves as a major going through Command and Staff College, sitting in the bachelor officer quarters in a cinder block room watching the season opening of Saturday Night Live on my TV going, what the fuck just happened? These are all my friends that I used to be on that cast. I should be on that show. And instead I'm sitting here studying Clausewitz. What the fuck? So like, I had to reboot the whole system. I had to come up with, you know, and I had a pity party and I felt bad and I was like, oh, and you know, I shook that off as quick as I could, but it happens. It's the human nature. It's the human spirit. It gets kicked in the gut sometimes. And then I regrouped, started asking myself questions. What am I going to do now? What do I care about? What do I want? Who am I? You know, let's go, let's go. So I started doing it, and I got on The Daily Show, which was even better for me, turns out. It was a better thing than SNL because I got to be Rob Riggle. I didn't have to be Mark McGuire or Dean, whatever his name is, or all these other, you know, Toby Keith or whoever I played on the show, right? I got to be me. So I got to do, so it was a better thing. And I got a longer run and we won Emmys. Maybe you've accomplished what you set out to accomplish. Maybe that mission is done. What's your next mission? What's your next mission? What's your next mission? And sometimes it you know right away, and sometimes it takes some soul searching. Sometimes it takes some networking and communicating, but I there's no finish line. You just got to keep repurposing.
Before we take last question, just the common denominator of all successful people. And ironically, we're talking about being the chairman of Napoleon Hill, and it was, for me, a perfect match of my mission and my legacy. And in the aspect of Napoleon Hill, I always consider myself as the modern-day Napoleon Hill, right? Thousands of interviews with billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, entertainers. First book I wrote, I went to the Napoleon Hill Foundation to help me write it. The playbook was about what Napoleon Hill did was, hey, get everybody's playbook to success. And the common denominator of all successful people, fulfilled, passionate, profitable, and purposeful people, is simply a desire that you must be what you can be. So if you have a desire that you must be what you can be, even sometimes when we get myopic, I just want to buy my mom a house. I just want to be a millionaire. Yeah, you might have a period, but if you have that desire, you're going to end up on a panel like this because that's what it takes. It's the common, there's not one person I've interviewed of great success that doesn't have a desire that they must be what they can be, because they're not going to listen to people tell you what you can't be. They know that I have a desire that I must be what it can be. All right, last question. Yeah. Sorry.
You guys have had phenomenal success, as you mentioned, setting possible delusional goals and people probably see you and think you've got it all figured out, and maybe you do. My question is, what's something that you're struggling with today?
Great question.
Great question. No, there's, there's personal struggles in everybody's life. Everybody's got a cross to bear, whatever it is, whether it's a sick parent, whether it's a terrible divorce, both of those, whatever it is. Okay. There's that thing, and it weighs on you. Like Atlas, it just weighs down on you. And sometimes it does feel like you're carrying the whole world. It's the mindset that you bring to that problem, you know, is it that really is going to determine how it goes. One of the reasons I've really been getting reintroduced to my faith again is because I feel like I've been living in a world of lies, and I'm seeking out some truth like we all do. And I think I found certain anchors, certain truths that I just can't deny. And so that fills me with a lot of hope and a lot of joy, a lot of peace. And so if you can find those things, you know, I think that what will help you, because everybody in this room has got something going on.
Yep.
That's not fun. And there's ways to deal with that. And it starts between the ears.
Yeah.
You have a perfect life.
Yeah. Right.
Just watch Instagram. Edwin's right? On fire.
You know, it's interesting you ask that question, because this year is probably the worst year of my life. It's funny, last year I had the best year of my life. And who would have thought a year later, I'm living what I'm living now. Business is probably the worst that it's had, but I'm starting to see the light. I said earlier, at the beginning of the year, I got hit with this lawsuit. And ever since then, it was like a downward spiral trying to, you know, get the company back up. I have another company that just bleeds me money right now. So just the one company that was doing very, very well gets hit with the loss. Then this other company that's bleeding money, I'm like trying to save both. Downward spiral. And then I get hit, blindsided. The one thing I thought I had going for myself was my family life. And then now I find myself in the middle of a divorce, which I did not think I was going to have to deal with that. And just like you mentioned, it's that's where faith, you know, comes in. And one thing that has always helped me, because you're always going to go through tough times in life, life and pain are inseparable, is what I noticed is as long as I keep taking massive action towards that worry for me, I already know that there's always going to be a reaction. So I've been mentioning everything is belief, right? When you're confident about something, all of a sudden the fear goes away. For me, it's taking action that has always given me, and getting in the trenches gives me a lot of confidence, right? So, and then the other thing that has helped me this year with just kind of the stuff that I'm going through is that, you know, you're going to have these events in life that happen to you. Life is just a series of events. And based on your interpretation, you're going to create a feeling. That feeling is going to create an action, and that action is going to create a result. So if you don't like the result, then you have to change the action, which means then you got to change the feeling, which means then you got to change the interpretation. Easier said than done, changing the interpretation. One of the things that I was just telling David for me that I've been working on is when that doesn't work, just because you're feeling something doesn't mean you have to act on it. And it's having the discipline to not act on it, even though you're having this crazy feeling that, you know, you want to tear some shit up, right? It doesn't mean you have to act on it, so.
Or tear someone up.
For me, it's pretty clear for me in my life what I'm struggling with is, I mean, probably the hardest thing as a parent, you're always wondering, am I doing it right? Because there's no manual. You know, I was literally having this conversation a couple of days ago, and I was in Honduras, and we were on the base, and we were taking questions from some of the soldiers, and they asked me, like, what was one of the scariest times of your life? And I was like, the scariest time of my life is when my oldest son was born, and I was responsible for another life. I was like... There's nothing more terrifying when you figure out, oh my God, I'm responsible for that. And as they've grown up, as I've grown older, you just never learn the balance of what's right and what's wrong. You never live in the comfort of parenting hard and doing what's right instead of what they like or what you may think might comfort them. It is, of all the struggles that I've had, you know, like, it is the one thing that is constantly a struggle. And the only joy is those times when they say they love you, or, they just want to have dinner with you or talk to you or be around you or just be in your space. And that doesn't happen often enough.
That's for sure.
But that's my struggle. It's like raising kids. And now I have the problem of my son. I'm a grandfather now, and I grew up, because I'm the youngest of six boys, I grew up without grandparents. I'm like, damn, I gotta do this again? Without like there's no experience. Like, so I don't remember what it was like to have grandparents, and now I'm creating experiences with my granddaughter trying to, like, ask the same questions. How do you do it right?
Nice. First of all, the scariest moment of my life was teaching my daughter how to drive. Second most is actually driving with her. She's scared to drive herself. My biggest struggle... is with my relationship with my mom, because she's in assisted living, suffering from dementia. Because I care so much for her, I'll drive, and I have a very active schedule, if you haven't noticed. I'll drive down there to be there when she wakes up. She'll hurry me to leave because she's repeating herself and realizes she's repeating herself. So she gets shameful when I just want to be with her. And so she says, oh, I got to do this. Or, you know, and so I leave after driving down there to be with her, to be there when she wakes up and to spend time with her. She hurries me away. And the worst part and the worst struggle I have is on my drive home, hey, are you going to come and visit me? And so defining the human experience with the infinite experience, knowing that the human experience really sucks in this situation, as we all have shitty things in the human side, and to appreciate there's a divine, infinite relationship between a mother and a son, that is important for me. But I cry there and back. And it's one of the most painful things to deal with. So I hope everyone can appreciate the answers, vulnerability, and honesty of my friends, and also the investment they made into this community to be here. It's not easy. I know a drive from San Diego is the same as a flight from Kansas City. So both these two, and then he came through the valley. So I'm not sure who traveled farther. So let's give these guys a huge round of applause.